Hello, everyone. It's me, Dr. D, here with another episode of Coloring Outside the Lines. That's right, COTL. And you guys know this is where we talk about everything dealing with parenting. We talk about it all, y'all. We talk about the difficult, great, the boring, the overwhelming, the disappointing. We talk about everything. So today we have our very, very special guest, Miss Caprice Banks. She is an author of Little Girl Grown. If you haven't gotten it, you need to get it because the book is the bomb. She's an educator. She's a compassion fatigue specialist. She's going to have to get into that and explain that to me a little bit more because I'm like, compassion fatigue specialist? That's a whole lot. Today we are going to talk about, when is too young to talk about race? And as you all know, with the societal climate right now, with the racial tension, with the murders, I'm not going to call them anything else but that, with the murders, with just the violence, with the disrespect for the Black life, it needs to be talked about. And a lot of parents have hit me up and have said, yo, when is too young to talk about race? So, Ms. Banks, I'm going to let you go ahead on and chime in, and we're going to kick it off. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a writer at heart. I love writing. I love researching. My first novel, Little Girl Grown, was actually published in 2018, the end of 2018. And it's a fiction novel. I'm currently working on a self-help book. Not really sure what I want the title to be yet. I'm bouncing back and forth between a couple, but it will definitely stand out and catch your eye. I'm also a compassion fatigue specialist, which is a person who helps the helper. Mm-hmm. So helpers would be teachers who take on secondary stress. It would be social workers who take on secondary stress. Psychologists, 911 operators, people in those categories, nurses. So anybody that can take on secondary trauma or take that, they deal in those fields and they kind of take that home with them. Mm-hmm. I have been trained as a compassion fatigue specialist to help them when they are literally fatigued in terms of taking on someone else's stress. So they need to de-stress because often they don't do it. Wow. So that's my role. And as an educator, I've been teaching for about 10 years now.
Well, offline, I will be hitting you up for your services as a compassion fatigue specialist, because as a mother, as a Black woman, as an educator, as an entrepreneur, as a rights activist, as all of the different hats that I wear, I'm tired.
Yes.
I'm fatigued. So I will definitely hit you up about that offline. Thank you for breaking it down, because obviously I need it. So if I need it, I know somebody else does. So we are going to pull out our coloring books right now, our activity workbooks, and we're going to take out Copper Conundrum. That's right. Today's color is Copper Conundrum. So let's get to it. Race. I have some facts for y'all tonight. First one being, babies notice race at 6 months old. Between 2 to 4 years old, they know and internalize racial bias. By 12 years old, kids are set in their beliefs. So with this copper conundrum, we need to figure out, when is too young to talk about race, and is there such a thing? What do you think, Caprice?
I was once told by a professor in my graduate studies at USC that race was a myth. Mm-hmm. And of course, when he first said it to me, I was like, what? You tripping? Race is not a myth. It's a real thing. But the further I got into my studies, and I minored in African American studies in undergrad, the further I got into my studies, I did realize that race is a thing that was created. And so Are there differences between people? Absolutely. Race, more so being Black versus white, I feel is the created part. And I know that it divides us. Are we different? I definitely think so. But I think race is used to categorize one as superior, another as inferior. So that is my issue with race. When is, you know, the right time to talk to kids about race? That's interesting, because in raising my son, my nieces and nephews, as young as, you know, two, they'll say, "You're yellow, you're brown," you know, they when they're learning their colors, they are learning to apply those colors to the color of people. And what's interesting is kids rarely look at someone and say, "You're white," unless they've been taught that. Because the color white doesn't fit white people. They might say, "You look pink," or, you know, like, "You look tan." But they very rarely say white. And then when they look at us, and I know my family, I have 14 aunts and uncles, I have 52 first cousins, so we run the gamut in terms of the rainbow of shades and hues. I know that my own son would say, "Well, mommy, you're yellow, and daddy is yellow, and grandma's brown." And so when you think about that, to change a kid's perspective, to show them that color equals race, I think that is the conversation that we need to have. So even though we run from shades to, you know, to tan to chocolate, right? Everybody here is Black. And for a kid, it's like, "Wait, what?" Yeah, not only is everybody here Black, but we're also kind of looked down upon, so I need you to be careful. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. How does how does something fun like color translate into this big, serious thing? And I think if you break it down like that, that's what makes race, I want to say laughable. And I say laughable because the foundation of it is to create inferiority and superiority. And so, yeah, when do you start that conversation? Do you start it when you're teaching kids colors? Do you start it when they start noticing colors? Or do you start it when they come home and they feel like they've been unfairly treated because someone decided that they were inferior and that they, the other person was superior? So I'm not really sure when to start it. Do you, you know, should you start the conversation, or, you know, do you just wait until it happens? Of course, as your child grows and gets older, if they are in an environment, I can say this, if they are in a mixed race environment, that conversation is going to be had earlier, I believe, than if they're not. I remember moving to Oak Park to make sure that my son had a good education at one of those good schools. And I stayed at the school. It was crazy. And then I had a mentor of mine tell me, "Oh, you've seen nothing yet. He's only in elementary. Wait till he gets to the middle school." And by the time my son got to the middle school, I had been teaching probably about 3 years by the time he got to the middle school. And when I tell you, I had to use every ounce of information I learned in becoming a teacher. I had to use all that language, all that lingo to help the administrators understand that this is not the kid, him nor his friends. These are not the kids you want to mess with. Because I'm going to come back, I'm going to fact check, I'm going to ask you, well, you know, like, what is your behavior management cycle? So just knowing the lingo really helped me help my son through middle school. But it was a task. And it was a task because there is a racial divide. And we know that there's a racial divide in Oak Park because they've made an entire documentary about it.
Exactly.
From the high school, you know what I mean? So, but it doesn't start there. It really starts in the elementary school. And so, like I said, at one point, my son was the, him and his best friend were the only two Black kids in their classroom. And that was tough because the teacher was harder on them than she was the other kids. And it was the only Black teacher he had at that school. So like, when I tell you, it's one of those things where you can prepare your kid for it, but until they experience it, they probably are just, you know, going along in the world and kind of being cautious, but not necessarily knowing what to look out for until it happens.
Mm.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm gonna, wow, that's a lot. That's heavy. And I've been there. I've had to throw around my education, so to speak, with a principal and a teacher already just this past year, and they were only in second and first grade. And it was about my son in first grade being choked in school, and just how they handled it, the situation. So I definitely understand where you're coming from, and I'm in that good school district, you know, so I get that. In terms of the question itself, when is too young to talk about race with children? I don't think that there's necessarily a time that is too young. You know, as a parent, when you know your child's intellectual capabilities, you know what's going to be over their heads, you know when you need to explain things and break it down on a level that they can understand. For example, we don't touch the stove is hot. You know, just putting your hand above the stove, hot, hot, you know, there's different things that we can do, right, to help bring along an explanation and understanding, a knowledge and awareness. I am a firm believer that if you wait to have the conversation until something occurs, then you've missed your time. And I say that because if we allow the world, society, their friends, their teachers, people who don't like them because of the color of their skin, or people who look like them shape their reality and what they know to be truth and fact, then you don't know what you're going to end up with. And you are going to spend a lot of time and energy turning that thing around. You know, I have little ones. Whoever tells them something first, that's the fact. That's the truth. I don't care. The sky is purple. If someone told them the sky was purple before I got to them to say it was blue, it's purple. That's what they believe is truth. We're working on critically thinking for ourselves, trying to get that together. Like, it's okay to speak up and say no. But what, and the reason why I say you're never too young, because what honestly frightens me is this, we're colorblind.
Right.
You know, concept that's going around. And I believe that that's problematic, right? Because when you say, well, we're a colorblind household, or I don't teach them race, I don't teach them color. I'm not saying, again, going back to, you made such an incredible point, Caprice, when you said, race is looked at as superior and inferior. If you take that out of it, and if you take that very instrumental piece out of it, then you can just focus on the shades of color, the beauty that is of different skin color, the beauty that comes with culture. But because it's looked at as this superior and inferior part, when we say we're going to be colorblind, then to me, you are allowing privilege to occur. And you are not allowing for empathy to be learned. And to me, that's what we're seeing all over the news, is a bunch of people with privilege, whether it's economic status, whether it's the color of their skin, and a bunch of people with no empathy, because they've been able to go through life not having to deal with anything, mm-hmm. not having to face the truth and the fact of an injustice. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the color of your skin, they, you know, it's not me. That whole, it's not happening to me, so, you know, whatever. I think that's the problem that I have with colorblindness and not discussing race. There's a way to talk about it and to be celebratory. And there's a way to show different skin colors. Like you said, you have the rainbow. You have 52 first cousins. You know, everybody lining up, putting their arms out and saying, look how beautiful the colors are.
Right.
It mm-hmm. doesn't matter that they're different colors. They're just, they're beautiful. They're all beautiful because they are colorful.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, that's huge, because then I think I also owe it to my children to explain why, since they practically have come out the womb, that I've had to give them this set of rules for when we leave the house that their friends don't have. I feel like I, as a parent, as a person, as an activist, as an educator, as a human being, right? I feel like I owe it to them to say, this is why you can't put your hands in your pockets. I don't have to say, because the police may shoot you in your face and you'll die. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to be that graphic. I don't have to turn on the news and show it to them at 8 and 6. Mm-hmm. But I can say, we never want anyone to think that we're taking something in the store that we haven't paid for or that doesn't belong to us. And the reason being is that because sometimes, because of your color, people will tend to think that you just having your hands in your pockets means that you took something. I can break it down on that level for them.
Right. So. And that is... it's true, it's real, and it's so disheartening because that is the part that is bondage. We're still in bondage.
It is.
And the thing is we are, your generation, my generation, we have decided to tell our kids why we have these rules. Mm-hmm. If you remember, we grew up with the same set of rules, and we had no idea why.
No explanation was given.
No explanation. And so our parents grew up with those rules, and probably because a lot of our grandparents came from the South. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they were well, you know, aware of what could happen. But nobody told us why. And so we're the NWA generation.
Yes, yes, that's true.
We just absolutely rebel, like, F this, we're not doing this. And so I truly believe that that is the part that keeps our children from growing up truly being free. Because they have to walk by a set of rules that do not even guarantee them
that part,
life, a full life. And so I think that is the totality of what saddens me about this whole deal with race. So that alone saddens me. I wish that our children could just literally grow up free, where they are able to state their opinion. My son is 17, and I think I'm a culturally aware mom, right? Mm-hmm. So when I say culturally aware, and I wasn't always like this, okay? I used to be super religious. So when I say culturally aware, rap music is poetry to me, right? And tattoos are okay with me. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with do-rags. And the reason why I feel that way about culture is because in teaching high school for the last 10 years, I know that high school is where kids start to discover who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for them to evolve into who they're going to be. So maybe you're going to grow your hair out. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be purple on Tuesday, blue on Thursday. I'm totally cool with that because you're exploring. You're trying to figure out who you are. And I think that the way our culture, I'm not even going to say comes up with things. The way our culture is just like so smooth with it. We just like, we ooh swag. I love it. Mm-hmm. But I also know that in most cases, it makes our kids targets. And that shouldn't be.
Agreed.
Because I've seen other kids that are not Black be free. I've seen them be free. And they are not, our kids are not given the same, oh, well, you know, kids will be kids or boys will be boys. We don't necessarily get that same, you know, tap on the wrist. And so for me, it really hurts to have the conversation. I tried to have a conversation with my son a couple weeks ago. And when I say I tried, I sat him down and we looked at each other and I said, I don't even know what to tell you to do if you get pulled over or if you get stopped by police. I have, son, I don't know. I literally don't know. That was the conversation. So I'm trying to process this also. And I'm trying to think of my son's earliest interaction in terms of race. I know he knew in his third grade class that him and his best friend were the only Black boys there. I know he felt that his teacher was harder on him and his friend than anybody else in the class because I felt it. She stressed me out. and I know that he said, I remember him coming home and telling me how the teacher treated kids who did everything they were supposed to do and always knew the answers.
Mm.
And it was only him and his best friend. She was the hardest on them. Right? And then the other kids were treated a certain way. So he noticed that. Mm-hmm. And I think that once he started to notice that is when we started to have that conversation. So I would say third grade.
I did my due diligence in preparation for tonight, and I did all of this research, and I was looking up all of these different resources, and since I have little ones, obviously I'm looking, you know, younger. But PBS Kids, to me, on their parent side, has done an awesome and incredible job bringing some of these issues to forefront, and just the blogs, and they have Arthur, When Arthur Takes a Stand.
Okay.
And it's not so much dealing with race as it is dealing with just being fair, mm-hmm. which I thought was great to really focus on the humanity side of the conversation. But some of the main things that I saw in all of their blogs were, you know, if you're going to talk about race, you have to do a couple of things. And that's one, you can't make it be a bad word. You know, mm-hmm. I remember growing up and it was just like, it was this list of bad words that we just couldn't say. To this day, my mother cringes if my kids say, that's a lie. You know, to her, you had to say, that's a story. And I'm like, it's a lie. That's what it is. It's a lie. We're going to call it a lie. You know, let's stop making up these names and these things to make you feel comfortable. And then, you know, when something happens, our kids can't articulate themselves to people that are not us because they don't know the code words.
We couldn't say lie or but.
Girl.
We definitely couldn't call a grown person a lie.
You couldn't say lie, but I mean, it was just like a list. And I'm like, what? Yeah. This is stupid. But, you know, I think society has made race be a bad word because the conversation is uncomfortable. People don't discuss it when things happen. They put it off because it's uncomfortable for them as a parent. And I'm seeing this whole thing, well, I'm not an expert. I don't know how to get started. I don't know how to talk to them. Well, guess what? No parent is an expert in anything. Those kids did not come with a handbook to tell you what to do. You're going to make the mistakes that you made, and you're going to make some more, and so are they. You try your best, and then that's it. And I feel like that's a cop-out. I don't know where to start. I don't know how to. I don't know what to say. I would encourage parents, whenever you feel comfortable, right, I say do it as early as possible on the level that the child can understand, but to each his own. But give facts. Give the truth. And give it in such a way that honestly is empowering at the end, not just for the Black community, but anybody of any race. Give it in such a way where it's empowering, where empathy is there, where love is there, where humanity is there, right, as the foundation. And don't avoid history, right? Don't avoid it, because we avoid it. Don't avoid it, because again, that's being true to the fact. And recognize your own biases. Recognize your own bias that you have, because it's a journey. To me, it's a journey between parent and child, this discussion, right? Because like you said, you set your son down and was like, I don't even know. I don't know. And, you know, and I'm driving down the street with an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old in the back seat, and I'm going, if I get pulled over, because I have gotten pulled over with them in the car before, you put your hands in your lap, flat down on your lap, and you don't say anything. And then, you know, we got to have a test run. I mean, it's just crazy the things that you have to, that you feel like you have to do. And like you said, we don't even know if you do all of those things right, right? Because we've seen it where I could be taking a jog, I could be eating my Skittles, I could just be driving while Black, computing while Black, selling, you know, an entrepreneur while Black, let's call it what it is, you know, and and it doesn't have to necessarily even be the police. I could be barbecuing while Black, and someone will call the fire department on me. They're not supposed to be out here barbecuing. Ma'am, it's the park. there's no, you know, so it's crazy. And I found myself, there's this show on Netflix, Family Reunion with Tia Mowry. It's kind of corny, y'all. I'm going to be honest.
It is kind of corny.
But there's an episode at the end of part one, the last episode, and I wrote it down. What is it called? Remember When Our Boys Became Men. That was our conversation starter last weekend. I skipped the Arthur. We've been we've done the more elementary stuff. I felt like we needed to step it up because my kids always want to know why. Why do I have to do this? So I just said, come on, let's sit down, let's watch TV. I put it on, I didn't give any preference, you know, to anything. I didn't preface it. I didn't say, you know, we're gonna have this discussion afterwards. I let it play, it ended. How do you feel? And, you know, and it was like, I feel really angry. I'm angry, mommy. I'm mad. I'm sad. I kind of want to cry. I kind of want to fight. Why did they treat them like that? And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the episode, but the little kids got locked out the house. They were looking for the spare key. Police came up, guns drawn. They didn't get down on the ground. And it just so happened that the parents came home and saw it. And just how the father was some famous basketball player or something, some athlete.
Right.
Just how the father, because of his status, was able to get the police to leave them alone. But then they began to be harassed by this officer because he fought back, you know, by making complaints and things like that. And that allowed me to answer some of those why questions. And I said, unfortunately, this is not a one-stop shop thing. This is not, you're going to get pulled over on December 17th, 2020. It's unfortunately, history has shown us is going to continue to happen, probably until the day you die. So this is why I give you these things to do. Just know I love you and I will keep you safe, you right. know, as your mommy. Your daddy will keep you safe as your dad. And just try to do these things, you know.
Right.
And my kids are like, well, you taught us to stand up for ourselves. I did. But in the instance that someone has a weapon pointed at you, I need you to try your best just to do what they ask you to do. And then mommy can get it.
Right.
And that's a tough conversation to have. That was that was difficult to have with, you know, a soon to be third and second grader. That was tough because I remember sitting at the mall with their father and strolling through the mall and being like, looking at Black families with their kids way before we even had children, looking at white families with their kids. This look all, you know, all races, colors, nationalities. We looking at everybody. Look how they act with their kids. Look how they, and the main thing that we saw was in this research, right?
Yes.
Black families had those kids right up on them.
Yeah.
Don't you go too far. Don't you get too loud. Don't you, you say a word, mama or daddy was ready to knock somebody's head off. Don't you touch nothing on that shelf. And we looked at the other kids of other races, especially, you know, white people, and the kids were far out front. Not a care in the world, skipping stuff, mom and dad strolling back, holding hands.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, and I remember telling him, I want to raise our children with a little bit of white. As crazy as that sounds, I want to raise them pulling from that culture. Because look, you said it on the head. I said, look how free they are.
Yeah, you want to raise free children. Absolutely.
They don't have a care in the world.
Free children.
And that's so sad that we have to even have a blog on PBS Kids, a cartoon, you know, shows on Netflix. Netflix got the whole Black Lives Matter. You just type that in and a gazillion things gonna pop up now to educate. Yeah. But it's just like, y'all, it's 2020.
It is. It is. And that episode that you're talking about, I haven't seen it, but it reminds me of an episode of Queen Sugar when the son got pulled over.
Yes.
And in the nice car that his basketball dad bought him. And like it really changed his life. And so I remember that episode and that it shook me to the core. Like, it really shook me to the core because the officer, like, he actually, the boy peed his pants. He peed his pants. And so, and he wasn't a kid that, like, that even deserved, like, he didn't even deserve to be pulled over. So, I'm going to leave that there. The other thing that I want to say is, I remember a friend of mine. She's very free, just her. You know, her demeanor is very free. She's a yogi. She's a Black woman. And I remember her, she was writing a book about how to raise free Black children.
Mm.
And I remember one interesting thing she said to me. We were having a conversation, either having a conversation or we were sitting around watching something and like Jaden and Willow came on television. And I remember when Willow came out with, I whipped my hair back and forth and she had shaved the sides of her head. And that was a big topic in the Black community. Right. Oh, she is too young to have her hair shaved.
To express and herself. Yep.
He was like, I'm thinking to myself, like, well, mama said it was okay. Like, why is this an issue? And I'm telling you, my friend looked at me and she said, Caprice, she said, we don't know what free Black children look like. And that's why we have a problem with this. And I knew exactly what she meant, but like now I feel like I'm at the point where I can unpack it. Right? Like that we need to, and I even put this on Facebook the other day because I was talking to or maybe I was reading something or listening to something that David Banner was talking about. And he said, what does freedom look like to you? So we're fighting, we're protesting, we're marching, but what does freedom look like to us? Mm. What is being free? And I think that we've been in bondage for so long that we haven't necessarily thought about what the idea of freedom looks like. I follow some very interesting people on Instagram. And of course, in my whole self-care and my compassion fatigue research, I'm learning what freedom looks like individually to me, but as a community. When I heard comments about the looting, like, now those stores ain't never going to return, like Walmart's never going to open back up. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, but do you understand how we're depending on a company that's not even owned by us?
That don't treat their employers well, that pays them trash.
So we're concerned about that company because it's all about this company has been here, we're used to it, we're comfortable with it. We're okay with that. Like, someone has to stand up and say, hey, let's buy it out and make it our own, right? So the one thing that I've learned about what's happening right now is everybody has a part to play, okay? Now, the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955 was it 55? I think it was 55 because Emmett Till was killed earlier that year, and then it was December, I think, when Rosa Parks sat on the bus, and then it started.
It was December. Yeah, It was 55 to 56. So you were right. Okay. It ended at 56. Yeah.
Okay. So the bus boycott, like, I've always wondered. I'm like, so nobody rode the bus. That alone, I think, I know this is going to sound crazy, but it probably took some shaming because I know that there were people who wanted to ride the bus.
Yeah.
Everybody was not in unanimous agreement.
You probably had to snatch people. Like, didn't I tell you don't get on that bus? Like, literally. Yeah.
Literally. You understand what I'm saying? And so I think about those things. I think about strategies. I think about what it took. I think about when we see snippets of how Harriet Tubman was like, you know, no, you're not going back.
That's not nice. Bring them with you, because it's like I feel like as a people, because of how we were oppressed, mm-hmm. any people, not just Black folks, you get comfortable. Mm-hmm. In that oppression. That's like being a domestic, mm-hmm. you know, violent relationship.
Yeah, yeah, Stockholm syndrome.
Comfortable in that oppression. And then it's just like, well, if I leave, then who gonna feed me?
Exactly. You actually forget your power.
And it's like, you feed yourself. Grow your own food. Get out exactly. here and 20 of yes. y'all go in and buy the store.
Exactly. And what the other thing that I wanted to say, I did a program, a National Endowment for the Humanities program in Atlanta last summer through Georgia State. And it was called The Problem of the Color Line. Mm. And it was like racism and, you know, in Atlanta. And it was very, very interesting. I'll say that. But this is the conclusion I came to. We visited the infamous Fox Theater. Mm-hmm. Fox Theater is absolutely beautiful. I love it. We toured it. The bathrooms are, you know, very, very elegant and, you know, very, I don't even know what to call it. It's kind of like a medieval theme or like there was like an Egyptian theme. There were just so many things in the different bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And then we got to a certain part, and it's like, okay, we're going to visit the colored section. I was like, what? Color section? Literally, the color section is 6 to 7 stories up because they had to walk up what is really the fire escape from the outside to get into the theater. There was a parking garage across the street. I believe it was 7 stories. And once you got to the top, the door that you would enter into, the colored entrance at the Fox Theater, you were at eye level with the top of the parking garage. I believe we counted 119 stairs. I did not walk up them because my ancestors had done enough. So I was not going to subject myself to that. So I stayed on the inside. I did walk up to the top through the inside. But it was at that moment that I realized that race, the issue of race in America is, in its simplest form, is bullying.
Yes.
And everybody is against bullying, right? Parents, white, black, everybody's against bullying. But nobody sees racism as bullying. And so I think that's a great start in terms of talking to our kids about racism. So in one of our debriefs after seeing the Fox Theater, leave it to Caprice, there were about 5 or 6 of us that were black. We were from different places. And bullying came up to me. And I said, it's crazy. I said, when you're being bullied, it's usually because outwardly this person thinks they're better than you.
Mm-hmm.
They secretly envy you, right? And they're using their power to intimidate you. But all based on your color? That is a mental illness. And when I tell you, I mean, some of the gasps that I heard. And this was about a year ago to the day. Bullying is an issue. It is a mental issue. And if you are the one being bullied, the bully has an issue with themselves. It's not you. They actually see something in you that they admire, that they can't quite put their finger on. But in each circumstance, and in any circumstance, once you are tired of that bully, that's when the funk hit the fan.
True.
And I think we're at a funk done hit the fan place right now. And I'm actually glad we're at that place because it is long overdue.
Agreed. Wow. We have really taken this copper conundrum color and have really not just colored outside the lines, but have colored outside the book, the pages, everything. I mean, we have really gotten into some things. Wow. I definitely would say that this is a conversation that is going to have to be continued because I think that there's so much more that we can do with this. Just even discussing bullying as racism. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at it as that in its simplest form, right, that opens up a way easier way for parents to navigate this discussion. And so I definitely thank you for your input. This was absolutely wonderful. I would love to have you back on Coloring Outside the Lines again for several topics that I've written down. Because I think it's important for us to hit on a bunch of other stuff. And we didn't even get into a bunch of stuff that I had in my notes, but it's all good. This was wonderful. Thank you so, so, so much. Please tell us where we can get your book.
Yes, my book is available on iTunes. It's available on Amazon.com, Walmart.com, Target.com, Barnes & Noble's online. So yeah, you can get it at any of those places. Little Girl Grown.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Caprice.
Yes.
We will have you back again until next time for another episode of Coloring Outside the Lines. Talk to you all soon. Bye.